We're whistling along, talk two, which I've entitled The Interior Castle, A View from the Inside. So in our last little mini talk, I asserted that humans are the great mystery of God's created order. Now, I think there's nowhere where we encounter the mystery more than when we look at the internal side of our humanness. Ernest Becker, Canadian anthropologist, he wrote, "Each of us walks about with a great wealth of interior life, a private and secret self. We are, in reality, somewhat split in two, the self and the body, the one hidden, that's the interior, and the other open." Now, the Bible's anthropology, Old Testament and New Testament, reflects humans as body and spirit, mirroring what Becker's talking about here, or body and soul. And when it comes to these two, the embodied side of us is fairly straightforward to grasp, although that endeavor is still ongoing within the scientific community. We've seen and see more and more what a wonder the body is. Bill Bryson, interesting writer in lots of subjects, his book, The Body, A Guide for Occupants, puts it like this. I like this. He said, "The body is often likened to a machine, but it's so much more than that. It works 24 hours a day for decades without, for the most part, needing regular servicing or the installation of spare parts, runs on water and a few organic compounds. It's soft and rather lovely, is accommodatingly mobile and pliant, reproduces itself with enthusiasm, makes jokes, feels affection, appreciates a red sunset and a cooling breeze. How many machines do you know that can do any of that? There's no question about it. You are truly a wonder. But then, so it must be said, is an earthworm." Typical Bryson humor. You're a wonder, but so is an earthworm. Now, as marvelous as the body is, it's not our bodies that fully enchants us. It's not the fullest part of the wonder of who we are. And that's not to diminish the body. It's just to say that the body is as good as it is. Without the soul, without the interior, would be just like an earthworm. Now, it's because we have this interior life, this wealth of interior life that Becker referred to. It's because of that, that when we look at the atoms, when we look at the dirt, we say, that's not us. So we look at the components that make up matter and we conclude, I'm not from there. So we have the kind of existence as humans that sees matter as a stranger. And many secular philosophers acknowledge that that's how we think. And that gives humans an awareness that we stand above everything else in nature as super special. That's the sense we have. Thomas Ligotti puts it like this: "No creature caged in a zoo even knows what it is to exist, nor does it crow about being superior to another kind of thing, whether animal, vegetable, or mineral. As for us humans, we reek of our sense of being special. I'm not from there. I'm not from matter." Now, this sense of being special is linked to our having a within. This is our awareness that we have this wealth of interior life, that we are end souls. So the question today is, what is our within? How do we understand it? Now, within the sciences, our within has been reduced to consciousness. Today, we're obsessed with consciousness. The German neurophilosopher Thomas Metzinger has dubbed our age as consciousness culture. And why are we obsessed with consciousness? Well, consciousness poses one of the final frontiers for scientific investigation. This is the last unsolved mystery of our humanity, getting to grips with consciousness. Now, the hardware account, which takes consciousness very seriously, it has to reduce it somehow to the brain. So matter within the hardware account, matter is the great absolute. So this is the worldview of materialism. And that means everything with nothing left out has a material explanation. So within the hardware account, there can't really be an independent reality of mind or soul. Consciousness somehow has to be an emergent property of the brain. So our obsession with consciousness today is to nail down what some call the ghost in the machine. We have to bring it out of hiding. So E.O. Wilson, a distinguished academic at Harvard and Duke, in his book, The Meaning of Human Existence, he says, no scientific quest is more important to humanity than to nail the phantom of conscious thought. Now, there is no doubting the marvel of the human brain. There's a picture of it. There's nothing spectacular about it. On the outside, it weighs about 3 pounds, looks to me a bit like an walnut. And though I've never touched a brain, I'm told it has the consistency of a soft boiled egg. Now, neuroscientists tell us that that spongy mass is the most complex mechanism in the universe. Did you know it churns through more information in 30 seconds than the Hubble Space Telescope has processed in 30 years. Wow. So between our ears, we have 100 billion neurons firing away, and all the connections between them, it's almost infinite. We can't really grasp it. It's just so much, so far beyond our telling at the moment. Now, in the hardware account, it looks at the brain and it says consciousness, this sense of having a within, must be in there somewhere. So the hardware account, science, neuroscience, is putting in a huge effort to pin this down, to get to grips with it. Now, this is a massive subject, but I just want to say 2 points here. The attempt to reduce consciousness to the brain is a fool's errand. It's doomed to failure. And many in the sciences now are beginning to acknowledge this. The first reason it's a fool's errand is this. Consciousness itself belongs to the realm of the unseen. Consciousness isn't a material substance. You can't put it on a slide in what they call a smear and then blow up consciousness under an electron microscope. You could never do that, because it's unseen. So what consciousness generates is real enough. Thought, complex feeling, we can see different parts of the brain light up because of this. But consciousness itself doesn't exist in the visible realm. So what is most uncanny, says Ligotti, about the self, and you could put consciousness in place of the self, is that no one has yet been able to present the least evidence of it. Like the soul, that figure of speech, which has long since been snickered out of existence, the self may be felt, but never be found. It's unseen. So that's one of the challenges. The other challenge in nailing down consciousness is this. We can never get beyond ourselves to actually see what it is. Now, this might sound a bit complex, but it's an interesting point. This guy, George Zarakidis, wrote a book on artificial intelligence entitled In Our Own Image. And he asked this, where are we when we look at us? How can the subject become the object and vice versa? Or how can we be in two different places and still be one and the same? So the point is this, as we pursue an understanding of consciousness, we, the subjects who are doing the investigation, are always the central character. So the explorers of consciousness can never escape being the subject, the one who's looking, the one who's examining. So that means we can never become the object of our own investigation. And again, many in neurosciences see this. You can't step outside of consciousness to see what's going on in our minds. The mind can't observe itself from the outside. As someone has wisely said, my thinking is the only window into my existence, into my conscious existence. So we can view the brain from the outside as an object of our investigation, but we can only inspect consciousness from inside of it. And that's why grappling with consciousness has been called the paradox of paradoxes. And we're beginning to recognize there's no frontal assault in terms of understanding how it works. Now, there's another conclusion that I think many within neurosciences fail to acknowledge. And this is a highly disturbing conclusion. And it's this. If consciousness is the brain, then there is no real you. You are a self illusion. And this is something that's been raised by increasing numbers of neuroscientists and neurophilosophers. Bruce Hood is one. He's a distinguished academic here in the UK, the director of the Bristol Cognitive Development Center. And he wrote a book called The Self Illusion, Why There Is No You Inside Your Head. So he makes the obvious point. If consciousness is reducible to the brain, it's just the firing of neurons, then I'm not me and you're not you. Any sense of self that we carry in our consciousness is delusional. It's just our brains tricking us. As Ligotti says, there is no you that lives. And he believes this. Only a body going about its business of being alive and obeying biology. We're living in a self-illusion if consciousness is reduced to the brain. Now, it tends to be philosophers who have the courage to name this very uncomfortable conclusion, if the hardware account were right. Scientists go about their work and they ignore this side, but philosophers state it. And it's interesting, you go back to the 19th century, 1847, there's a German philosopher, you said he was German, so of course he's going to be a bit depressive in his conclusion. His name is Julian Bahnsen, and he's 17 years old. He should be learning chess moves or playing football. He's an emerging philosopher at 17 years old. And he came up with this conclusion, and he wrote it on a piece of paper. Man is a self-conscious nothing. Man is a self-conscious nothing. He actually beat Bruce Hood to the conclusion that self is an illusion if we are merely material beings. Now, that's not a thought that's going to help the mental health of a teenager struggling with self-doubt. It's not what you want to say to your kids when you're putting them to bed at night. Oh, bless you, my little self-conscious nothing. You're just a trick. You're just a delusion inside your brain making you think you're something. Now, that's a pretty disenchanting account of what a human is. Basically, you're an illusion pretending to be a someone. It's enough to drive a person mad. So let's think again about the Bible's better account. As we saw in the last little mini talk, Genesis tells us that God breathed into Adam the spirit, the soul of life. So this is a turn of expression to say that he endowed humans with a soul, starting with Adam and every other human who's ever existed. So here's the basis for this wealth of interior life. We have a real within. We have minds. We have consciousness, self-consciousness. We have a sense that I exist. Again, in the words of Rabbi Sacks, we have been brushed by the wings of eternity. God has ensouled us. And because consciousness, our sense of the within, is real, it's not our brains playing a trick on us. This is true to who and to what we are. It means we really exist. And there's part of us that can't be reduced to the material realm. We are a composite of body and soul. These two perfectly integrate it. So neuroscience is failing in its quest for the secret of consciousness. We could talk a lot about this. There's actually a growing disenchantment here. Will we ever uncover the secret of consciousness? But as it pursues what they call the ghost in the machine, that the self could only be an illusion if the hardware account were right. But the Bible's explanation says that our self-sense isn't illusory. Sorry, an illusion. Rather, it's elusive. To try and pin down the soul is to deal with one of the great mysteries of our being. And of course, we don't have a problem with the mysterious, that which is beyond the remit of science. We reject scientism, which is the epistemology that says if something is true, then science must be able to discover it. Only science has access to what is true, nothing beyond the remit of science. Now, as supernaturalists, which Christians are, we say we don't have a problem with the supernatural. We believe in God. God is. That's a statement of supernaturalism. And we say God created. That's another supernaturalist statement. And we say as our creator, he has endowed us with a soul, a real soul. Another supernaturalist affirmation. And it's this reality in terms of how we've been made, which gives us this sense that we're not from there, that we're strangers to dirt. It gives us this sense of being elevated and special. Part of what the Bible says, Genesis says, is having dominion over the worlds. So this is where the ennobling of humans come from. This is our enchantment that God has made us body and soul. And it's this soul side that gives such depth to every human person. Augustine in the Confessions maps this out, where he says, let's try and map it out. Who can map out the various forces at play in one soul? Man is a great depth, O Lord. The hairs of his head are easier by far to count than his feeling, the movements of his heart. Man is a great depth, O Lord. So as ensouled creatures, we were made, as we'll see in the next little talk, we were made for worlds that exist beyond the borders of nature. Yes, we can explore the natural world, but there are other horizons of the soul of the world that we as ensouled creatures can engage. Abraham Heschel, his wonderful book, Man is Not Alone, he says there is more potentiality in his soul than in any other being known to us. Look at an infant and try to imagine the multitude of events it's going to engender. One child called Bach was charged with power enough to hold generations of men in his spell. The wonder of every ensouled human being. So that's why the interior world of humans is our greatest endowment. And we have this immense inner universe, which has more potentiality than anything else that occupies this world. Now, the greatest potentiality for any human person is this: to know and love the great and glorious God who made us. That is the true depth of the human soul. And it's Teresa of Avila. She was a 16th century mystic. And she coined this term, the interior castle, to describe this reality. It's a vision of the soul. And this soul is a castle which contains seven great wings. And for her, these were the mansions of our being. And these mansions of our inner being were created for communion with the true and living God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So we have this wealth of interior life. The hardware account said it's consciousness, which reduces this to the brain. And this has some devastating conclusions. The worst being, we're self-conscious nothings. We're just illusions pretending to be something. And then the Bible reveals that we are ensouled. God has breathed his breath of life into us. And that gives us depths that science can never fully access, as Augustine so wonderfully reflected. So there's a little look at our inside, the fact that we're ensouled, how that enchants us, this interior castle, which the Bible reflects on all the way through in terms of being ensouled creatures. And this enchants us and dignifies us, gives us nobility in such a wonderful way.